I appreciate Jesus this morning. I thank the Lord for salvation. It's a great gift, something we couldn't purchase ourselves. Life would be so much different for us today if it wasn't for Jesus. Those of you who have found Him precious. And those of you that have not found Him, when you find Him, you will find Him precious. And if you've not found Him, I want to encourage you to seek the Lord. Without God, there's no hope. Without God, life is miserable. We may think we are enjoying life, but it's miserable compared to what it is when you find God. And once we find God, it's important that we hold fast to Him. And we're living in a world today where there's much to call our attention away from the Lord and following after Him. With the help of the Lord this morning, I want to encourage us to get our eyes on Jesus. And not just take a fleeting glimpse at Him or when it's convenient. But we need to get focused on the Lord. I've been thinking about this word focus quite a bit of late. To focus on something is to draw in our faculties and put all of our attention onto something. And there's nothing more important to us than to do that and get all of our faculties and our attention, our mind, our eyes, our being all focused on Christ and to hold it there. It's not good enough to do it in a passing moment, but we need to maintain that and keep our eyes on that. And the Scripture, I believe, instructs us in that, and we have many examples to encourage us to do that. And saints, if we're going to make it to heaven, we're going to have to do that. It's not good enough to just get saved, but we've got to maintain. And we're in a battle. We have an adversary. We have an enemy that's going to do all that he can to get our attention away from God, to pull us away, and he can do it in such subtle, simple little ways. But you and I, there's just not enough emphasis, importance can be placed on the necessity to keep ourselves focused and directed towards God at all times. There are people in the world, and we can all fall prey to this, that seem like don't have much purpose or direction in life. It seems like that they can just be kind of pitched from pillar to post, as it were. Whatever comes along, that's the thing that's most exciting, that's what they take up with today. And when that loses its glory, it's on to something else the next day. And then the next day, it's on to something else. People that practice that in their lives, when they get saved, they have a battle. They have a battle on their hands because they've developed a lifestyle, a pattern of living that's got to change. We cannot live for God that way. When things are up, everything's fine and we're happy and we're pursuing that. But when that loses its appeal, then something else comes forward and that looks like the thing and they take off after that because it's easier, because it brings pleasure to the flesh many times. But in living for God, we're going to face some difficulties and hardships along the way. And if we don't keep our heart and mind focused on God, the enemy's going to be successful in dragging us away and leading us off down the wrong path. I spoke this morning about there being many winds of doctrine blowing out in the world. Many people saying this is the way, and others saying this is the way, come over here. And all of those paths and ways, the enemy has prepared to appeal to the flesh, something about us, to draw us that direction If we don't keep our eyes focused on Christ, upon the way of truth, we can be pulled aside and led astray. I think about getting a vision. There's a scripture in the Bible, in Proverbs, the 29th chapter, the 18th verse. It says something about where there is no vision, the people perish. It's more than just getting a fleeting glimpse of something. It takes time to live for God. And we don't have much time, saints. When we view life through the eyes of eternity, God has given us just a little space of time here. And if you and I live to what God has allotted, 70 years, that's just a fleeting moment compared to eternity. And our latter end is going to be our longer end, our longest end. And we need to have an eye and a mind towards that latter end. And be taking opportunity of this little space and time, the world that we're in today, to be prepared for that. And we need to ask God to give us a vision of heaven and hell. We like to dwell on heaven and what we anticipate and expect it to be, and well we should. And we need to get our focus over there and our mind over there so that our life and our conduct and that we seek after leads us in that direction. But we need to get a vision of hell also and realize that if I lose my focus, if I become careless and indifferent and allow little things to work into my life, it's going to lead me step by step to another place in eternity and a place that's called hell. Now, we don't hear a lot of preaching about hell. And I know why. The devil don't want it to be preached. No, he don't want it to be preached. He doesn't want it to be talked about. And we would rather talk about heaven. But hell is real also. It's real. And we need to get a dread and a fear of it as much as we need to get a love for heaven and what it promises and the hope that it has for us. We need to get a vision of that. If we can get a vision of that, it'll help us to get ourselves focused in the right direction. And we need to keep and hold that before us at all times. Our vision is important, and what we keep focused on is very important. There are many distractions, things to get our mind, our eyes, our life, our occupation, things to get us distracted and pulled away, to hinder our vision, to hinder our focus in life. There are people in the world that get in their mind something that they want to pursue in life. And sometimes it's done at a very young age. I'm thinking of, in particular, those that seek after the honors that come with the Olympics. And some of those, you read the history of those that have gone through that life and succeeded and won the gold. And they've got this little round medal in their hands. And they look at that, and that constitutes their whole life right there in their hand, that piece of gold that they had hung around their neck. The glory that goes with it passes with time. And yet the energy and the focus of their life, some of them from the time they were 5 years old to adulthood, the whole focus of their life, all their energies, sacrifices, has been focused and put into accomplishing one thing, and that's to someday stand before that crowd of roaring people and hold in their hand this little piece of gold. They sacrifice, they do without, while their friends are out doing the things that friends do and enjoying life. They are disciplining themselves, putting all their energies in to being able to gain this little prize. It's admirable when you consider the energies and the focus and the discipline and all that goes into that. But it's for a corruptible crown. It's for a corruptible crown. Yes, they would like to be with their children other children playing and doing things. But if I do that and I lose my focus, if I don't put my time towards this, I may not gain. I may never be able to win this little prize that's going to be hung around my neck. Someday it'll be put up on a shelf or in a showcase. And in time, the world will forget everything I've done. That same energy and discipline, I think about some of them. They absent themselves from their families, endure hardships. The physical energies that are put into that wear them out. All of that for what? Something that's corruptible. The Lord wants you and I to get our energies and our focus after a crown that is incorruptible, that fadeth not away. We must do that. We must do that. That one individual that started that direction after that gold medal, but they saw their friends out playing and having a good time, going to this activity, doing that, and they were finally pulled away and didn't devote as much time to their training. The training that goes into that is more than physical, it's mental as well. And they have to get their minds and everything tuned in and focused. They have to tune out everything else and get all their physical and mental abilities directed to that one moment. And everything is determined in that one short moment of time, maybe 2 or 3 minutes of performance. A whole lifetime, all their mental faculties, physical faculties, all of these things. Why can't we serve God that way? How important is going to heaven? How serious do we take eternity? Is it that serious? Is it something that we should put off preparing for to a future time, to another time? I can do that later. It's serious because life didn't come with a beginning date and an ending date for you and I that we know about. You and I do not write on the calendar when we're leaving this world. That's not within our power to determine. That's in God's hands. So when I allow myself to lose my focus and my direction for a while and say, well, on down the road here, I'll take care of that, I may not have an on down the road. I may not have a time. We need, when God saves us, we need to approach that with our being saved for eternity. From that moment right there, and get our minds and our focus, everything, all of our energies, our appetites, everything directed towards heaven. We must do that. Now, there's a beautiful story in the book of Nehemiah. I love that book. The children of Israel had been led off into captivity and had been in captivity for quite some time. There's two prophets there, Ezra and Nehemiah, that deal with this. And I have noticed that many times God has put His people, some of His people, in high places. God has put them there, and He's put them there for a purpose, to be a help to His children. And they have many times endured and suffered great things, but God has, in His own way, has put them there. I think about Moses. He had to lose his family, as it were, was put in a basket out in the water because his life was in peril. And God, through His divine providence, put him in Pharaoh's court. Obadiah was in Ahab's court. And there are a number of them that God has put in different places for the purpose of helping His people. And so Nehemiah, he was in the king's court here also. King Artaxerxes. And he, in that place, was the king's cupbearer. And from reading concerning him, he seemed to have gained favor of the king. And some of his people came into the court on business of some sort, and Nehemiah asked them about Jerusalem. Those back in Jerusalem, he and a lot of the people had been carried off into captivity. They were slaves. in a foreign land. But they had never lost in their minds what it was like in Jerusalem, the home of their nativity, the place that God set His love upon, the place where God had dwelt and where they worshipped Him. And not all of the people were carried off into bondage. Some of them were left there in different cities. And Nehemiah inquired, "What about?" And the report made his countenance sad, it says. Let's look in the book of Nehemiah. I want us to notice through this story the focus they had on the job that had to be done here. And I want us to take from this what you and I need to do to make it successful through this life. In the first chapter of this book of Nehemiah, I asked, in the second verse, about the middle, it says, "And I asked them concerning the Jews that had escaped, which were left of the captivity, and concerning Jerusalem. And they said unto me, the remnant that are left of the captivity there in the province are in great affliction and reproach. The walls of Jerusalem also is broken down, and the gates thereof are burned. And it came to pass, when I heard these words, that I sat down and wept, and mourned certain days, and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven." This greatly moved and affected Nehemiah when he saw and thought upon the condition of things back in his homeland. He was the king's cupbearer. He served right in the presence of the king. And soon, in the second chapter, it tells us that he was in the presence of the king. In the first verse, "It came to pass in the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of Artaxerxes the king, that wine was before him. And I took up the wine and gave it unto the king. Now I had not been beforetime sad in his presence. Wherefore the king said unto me, Why is thy countenance sad, seeing thou art not sick?" This king discerned something here. Here was a man who, in the presence of the king, it was the responsibility of them to be pleasant and happy. But he had gotten a report about his brethren and about the holy city Jerusalem. And it caused him to have great grief and sorrow. And his countenance was sad in front of the king. And the king, observing this, must have had some respect and love unto Nehemiah for his service. And he said, "Why is thy countenance sad, seeing that thou art sick? This is nothing else but sorrow of heart." That was great discernment. This man is hurting in his heart. What's the problem here? "Then I was very sore afraid." A king had power over life. And he could take a life like that, and it didn't mean anything to him, because he had at his hand the whole kingdom and he could replace you. And so when he realized that he had shown himself and the king had picked up on it and had asked him this question, it brought some fear upon him. "And said unto the king, Let the king live forever." This was respect unto the king, the highest power over his life. "Why should not my countenance," he didn't hide from it, "why should not my countenance be sad? When the city, the place of my father's sepulchres, lieth waste, and the gates thereof are consumed with fire. Then the king said unto me, For what dost thou make request? So I prayed to God." Think of yourself. Put yourself there. I like to put myself as much as possible in these places where these things happened. Understand what was going on and what the importance of it is. Put yourself there this morning. How would you have responded when this question was put forth to you? You'd have probably done the very same thing he did. You would have sent up a silent cry to God, "Lord, give me wisdom to say the right words to affect this man in the right way." And so it says, "And I said, So I prayed to the God of heaven, and I said unto the king, If it please the king, and if thy servant hath found favor in thy sight, that thou wouldest send me unto Judah, unto the city of my father's sepulchres, that I may build it." You have to realize what a big request this was, the seriousness of it. Here, a nation that had been destroyed and carried off into captivity, their city had been racked and burned and destroyed, and now here's one of them that has the courage to stand up before the king and said, let me go back and rebuild this city that you all destroyed. And the king said unto me, the queen also sitting by, for how long shall thy journey be? And when wilt thou return? So it pleased the king to send me, and I set him to time. He gave him a time in which he would accomplish this. And so the king had favor on him and gave him permission. If you follow this reading, you'll find that he received from him letters that gave him safe conduct through the other nations to Jerusalem. It also gave him a letter that gave him materials to rebuild this city with. It sent along with him part of his army, giving him a safe escort through. It was quite a request, and all these things were granted. But I want us to notice as we follow this now, the focus that Nehemiah had on getting this task accomplished and how he wouldn't allow anything to discourage him or misdirect him or lead him off the course that God had set him on here. That's an important lesson for you and I to learn here, that we've started out on a journey too, and there's a great work to be done. And we don't want to be turned out of the way. We don't want to lose our focus. We don't want to leave our vision of the great work that God has given us to do. And the end of that thing being to dwell with Him in eternity. There are many things out there to discourage and to draw our attention away. We must not allow that to happen. Following on in this, in the 11th verse, he said, "So I came to Jerusalem and was there 3 days." We're not going to have time to read all of this, but as he went, he didn't tell them why he was going there. When he got there, he didn't tell them why he had come there. But he went out in the night, and he surveyed this city, and he rode around it, and he looked at it. And it was fallen down. There was rubble everywhere. There was breaches in the wall. The city had been burned. It looked like, through human eyes, an impossibility, no doubt. When he looked upon it, he could have been discouraged and said, "This task is too great for me." You know, the enemy will affect you and I the same way if we allow him. When we look upon this way, some say, "Well, I just couldn't live that way. It's too hard. It's too difficult. There's no way." That's the enemy. He'll get our focus off of heaven, off the reward. He'll hide hell from us and just simply make us say, "Well, that's too hard." We've got to get our eyes focused, get our energies directed towards this thing, and not allow anything to deter us or discourage us or cause us to draw back or to look around, cast about for an easier way or another way. There's only one way, saints. There's only one way. He went around the city and he came back, and then he revealed to them his purpose and his intent, why he was there and what they hoped to accomplish. In the 18th verse, "Then I told them of the hand of my God, which was good upon me, as also the king's words that he had spoken unto me. And they said, 'Let us rise up and build.' So they strengthened their hands for this good work." We're going to have to do this same thing. You think the world's going to strengthen your hands to do God's work? It's not likely. We're going to have the purpose and the determination, the focus in our lives, to set our hand to the work and strengthen ourselves in the Lord to accomplish this job that's to be done. And you think everybody's going to encourage you every day along the way? It's not going to happen that way. You're going to have what Nehemiah had here. Let's read on. "But then Sanballat, the Horonite, and Tobiah the servant, the Ammonite, and Geshem the Arabian, heard it, and they laughed us to scorn and despised us and said, 'What is this thing that ye do? Will ye rebel against the king?'" We're going to meet with those same things. We've already met with them. If we've lived for the Lord very long, you've already met with those Sanballats and Tobias and Geshams that have already ridiculed you and made fun of what you're doing, the way you're living, the way that you conduct yourselves, the places that you won't go, the things that you won't do. You've already met that. And you'll continue to meet that. And if we're not careful, if we don't have our focus and our love on the things of God and a desire that goes beyond everything else for heaven, we can allow those things to detract us, to pull us away. We'll lose our consecration, our focus, our desire, start feeling sorry for ourselves, start agreeing with the adversary. Folks, we've got to get our eyes on Jesus. We've got to get our eyes on Jesus and not look and listen to the Sanballats and the Tobias. They ridiculed, they laughed. And there was Nehemiah's answer. And what is our answer today? Then answered I them and said unto them, the God of heaven, He will prosper us. The God of heaven, He'll prosper us. Get that in our hearts. He will do it. He's promised it. He will do it. Therefore, we His servants will arise and build, but ye have no portion nor right nor memorial in Jerusalem. In the next chapter of this book, it begins to tell how they did do just that thing. They arose and began to work. This job that seemed impossible, this rubble of stones, the wall had fallen down in many places, been torn down from the foundation. And they rose up and began to work. And I noticed in this first, in the third chapter, they began to name out. Now, in that land, there were many cities in which there were still some Jews living. And they came from various cities, Jericho being one of them. And it names out the different cities that that the Jews that were not let off into captivity came and assisted in the rebuilding of this wall, of this city. And you notice in the first chapter, or in the third chapter, the first verse, notice the ones that took the lead. And this is important here, that we get this message. Then Eliashib, the high priest, rose up with his brethren, the priests, and they builded the sheep gate. Here was the ministry. There is a responsibility that comes first with the ministry to set the example in this focus that we're talking about, of this vision that we're talking about. If the ministry doesn't rise up and keep focused in the truth and in the Word, and the direction of God's work as His Spirit leads, how can they expect the sheep to follow? If our heart as ministers is not in the work of God as it should be, if our hearts and minds are not focused and consecrated to the work of God, live or die, whatever, that's where it begins. And here in the building of the wall, notice that the first ones that they mentioned were the priests and the work that they set out to accomplish. The sheep gate. The sheep gate faced the temple. It was the entrance that you went into the temple. My understanding is where they brought in the sacrifices, through this gate. There's a work for the ministry to do here, to be leaders in helping to direct the focus and attention of all others towards heaven. And it goes on through this whole chapter and it enumerates which ones did which work on which portions of this wall until the city was built up. They had a mind to work. Do you and I have a mind to go to heaven? Do we have a mind to work for God and take all with us that we can? If we go there, we're going to have to have a mind to do it. And more than that, we're going to have to keep ourselves constantly in tune and focused and our attention on those things. Or the enemy will come in just like Sanballat and Tobiah, ridicule us, make fun of us, try to discourage us and pull us away from this so great a work. And our soul hangs in the balance. Our soul, our never dying soul. In the fourth chapter, in the first verse, it says, but it came to pass that when Sanballat heard that we builded the wall, he was wroth. At first, it was just a plan, and they made fun of the plan. Now the work is going forward, and the wall is getting built back up. And now When Sanballat hears this, he's very wroth. He took great indignation and mocked the Jews. And he spake before his brethren and the army of Samaria and said, "What do these people Jews? Will they fortify themselves? Will they sacrifice? Will they make an end in a day? Will they revive the stones out of the heaps of the rubbish which was burned?" Now Tobiah the Ammonite was with him, and he said, "Even that which they build, if a fox go up, he shall even break down their stone wall." Going a step further. Now it's not just Sanballat and Tobiah, but it's the army of Samaria now. And the enemy will gather his forces against you and I today when we're doing a good work for God. And he'll do all he can to discourage us from going forward with it. A formidable enemy, the whole Samaritan army now. What will we do? Will we cow down from that? Or will we go forward in the power and the might of God? Where is our vision today? What is our focus in life? What is our hope? What did Nehemiah do? How did he deal with this situation? How did these Jews deal with this? Did they fall back in fear? This was valuable to them. This was the holy city. How valuable is the work of God to you and I today? How valuable is heaven to you and I? Nehemiah in the sixth verse of this fourth chapter. So built we the wall, and all the wall was joined together into the half thereof, for the people had a mind to work. They weren't turned aside, were they? In spite of the ridicule, in spite of the Samaritan army, they didn't back down. They didn't run and hide. They didn't fail to come show up for work. But it said the walls were built up to the half. All the way around the city, the walls now had come up to the half. They continued to work. In the seventh verse, but it came to pass that when Sanballat and Tobiah and the Arabians and the Ammonites and the Ashdodites heard that the walls of Jerusalem were made up and that the breaches began to be stopped, then they were very wroth. You know that the enemy will bring all the forces of hell up against you and I. He doesn't want us to go to heaven. He doesn't want to see the work of God go forward and progress. And he'll bring up all of his agencies and his forces against us. And conspired, all of them together, to come and to fight against Jerusalem and to hinder it. We're in a battle, saints. We're in a battle against the forces of evil. And the enemy is going to throw everything he can against us to dissuade us that we're doing the right thing or that we're going the right direction. And if you and I don't have our minds made up and don't have our eyes on Christ and are really focused in this walk, we're going to run. We're going to run. Nevertheless, we made our prayer unto our God. That's what we have to do, saints. When the enemy comes in with his bluffs, and sometimes it's not bluffs, it's real, we're going to have to do just like they did. Make our prayer unto God and set a watch against them day and night because of them. We're going to have to be on our guard. And that's what they did. They set a watch. This threat was real. This work is great and it can't stop. If we have to fight, we'll fight. But the wall is going to be built. And that was the determination that they had to get this job accomplished. They prayed and they set a watch. The Scripture tells us to watch and pray. That's just as real in our day as it was for them right then in that time. We must do that. We must do that. These people, if you follow this story out, they had a great job to do and they put their heart and their minds to it. They put their energies to it. They took the precautions they needed, but they did not stop the work. They did not stop the work. They pressed onward with it. Judah said, "The strength of the bearers of burden is decayed, and there is much rubbish, so that we are not able to build the wall." And the adversary said, They shall not know neither see till we come in the midst among them and slay them and cause the work to cease. But Nehemiah had a plan. God had a plan. And when they put that to work, it foiled the enemy and the work went forward. If you read this on, you'll see they put a sword in one hand and the tool that they were working with in the other hand. And they were on their guard, but they were busy on the wall doing the work. And we're going to have to do the same thing. There are things in life that we have to do. There's business at hand in the pursuit or in the continuation of our life that have to be done. And if we're not careful, we can give all of our attention to watching, as it were, here, and no work is being done. And I liken that into our lives, into the affairs of life, the cares of life. We can put all of our energies into the cares of life, and the work is left undone. Now, these Jews were small in number, and they could have looked at the enemy and been fearful and said, we're going to have to spend all of our time warding them off. And none of the work had been done. They'd have their swords in their hands, and all they'd been doing is standing on watch and waiting for the enemy to come in, and no work going forward. I liken that to the cares of life in this world today that you and I are in. And there's many of them and things that we have to do. And if we're not careful, we can get our focus and our attention all on those things, and it consumes our whole time. And the work of God goes left undone. Our spiritual walk with God suffers, and we lose ground. And our focus gets turned the wrong way. What did they do here? They watched, they stood on guard, but the work went forward. They continued to work. It would have been easier if they didn't have to stand on guard and they could have put all of their energies into it. But they didn't quit serving God or doing God's work because of this threat out here. And neither shall we lay down God or His work because there are a lot of cares of life to attend to. That's a trick of the enemy. The enemy wants you and I to get our eyes and our focus and our attention off of Him, off of God, and get them over on these other things so they can drag us down. In the 16th verse of this 4th chapter, and it came to pass from that time forth that the half of my servants wrought in the work, and the other half of them held both the spear, the shields, the bows, and the habergeons, and the rulers were behind all the house of Judah. They which builded on the wall, and they which bare the burdens, with those that laded, every one with one in his hand wrought in the works, and with the other hand held a weapon. For the builders, every one, had his sword girded by his side, and so builded. And he that sounded the trumpet was by me. And I said unto the nobles, and to the rulers, and to the rest of the people, the work is great and large, and we are separated upon the wall, one far from another. In what place, therefore, ye hear the sound of the trumpet, resort ye hither unto us. Our God shall fight for us. Our God shall fight for us. You hear the trumpet sound, you get over here and help me out. Saints, that's what we need to do. You see a brother that's in trouble and the cry comes, we need help over here. We need to rush to the rescue and help our brother through that situation that he can see the end with victory as well. And when we're in trouble and we're separated, we blow the trumpet, we want that to come to us, don't we? So let us be ready to go to the rescue. See the plan that Nehemiah had? It was a plan of God. And when God's plan is put in place and in order and working, it accomplishes the purpose that He desires it to accomplish. And it'll work in your life. It'll work in my life. It's important. And we must follow it as He gives it out and directs. So we labored in the work, and half of them held the spears from the rising of the morning till the stars appeared. Likewise, at the same time, said I unto the people, let every one with his servant lodge within Jerusalem, that in the night they may be a guard to us and labor on the day. He said, don't go back to those cities now. You just stay here in Jerusalem. There's safety in the church, folks. There's safety in the church. Don't depart from the church. Don't go away. You'll lose your focus. You'll lose your direction. And the enemy will take advantage and pick you off. In the 23rd verse, the last verse of this chapter, "So neither I nor my brethren, nor my servants, nor the men of the guard which followed me, none of us, put off our clothes, saving that every one put them off for washing." Now what's in this? I see in this a people that had a mind to work, they had a vision of what was going to be accomplished, and they were so focused and intent upon getting this job done that all of their energies, they didn't even lay aside their clothes. They worked from daylight to dark. They had themselves into this job to be done. And you and I must, to the same extent, get ourselves into serving God this very same way. Sanballat didn't give up. He ridiculed him. He had the whole army ridiculing him, and the work went forward. In that sixth chapter, "Now it came to pass when Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem the Arabian and the rest of our enemies heard that I had builded the wall and that there was no breach left therein, though at that time I had not set up the doors upon the gates, that Sanballat and Geshem sent unto me, saying, 'Come, let us meet together in some one of the villages in the plain of Ono.' But they thought to do me mischief." Well, ridicule didn't work. The threat of the army didn't work. So now let's negotiate. It don't work to negotiate with the devil. And we need to have the wisdom, discernment to understand when the enemy is trying to negotiate us out of our soul, out of our salvation, out of our hope of heaven. That was Sanballat's approach now. Well, come on down here off the wall, and let's meet over here in this city, and let's talk about this a little bit. This is serious business. Well, Sanballat knew if he could get Nehemiah out of the safety of the city, he could get him over there and destroy him. And you and I, if we allow the enemy to speak to us and begin to negotiate with us and pull us aside out of the safety of the church, he can destroy our soul. He can destroy our soul. And there are many subtle ways in which the enemy is endeavoring to do that to every one of us. We've got to get our mind and our focus on God, and the work that is before us is a great work, and not allow the enemy in any way, through threats, through ridicule, negotiation, any such way, to get us deterred from the work that's before us. No, I don't have time for that. I've got a great work to do here, and why should I come down here and waste my time on negotiating with you? He did it more than one time. The answer Nehemiah gave him was no. Do you think the devil's going to give up when you say no the first time? Listen to what it says. "Yet they sent unto me four times after this sort, and I answered them after the same manner." Don't back down. Hold the true position. The answer's no, no, no to the enemy every time. And so he responded that way. "Then Sanballat, his servant unto me, sent Sanballat, his servant unto me in like manner the fifth time with an open letter in his hands." This open letter is an indication of contempt. Anytime a letter was sent from a king, it was closed and sealed and had the king's stamp on it. And here he sent him down here with an open letter, still trying, being contemptible to God's servant. If you follow this story on, you'll find that he even tried to incorporate false prophets. He even used forces within, as it were, the church. The enemy will use every tactic he can to get us misdirected or to pull us aside and get our mind and our focus away from the things that God would have them on. The enemy is after our soul. He's after you. He's after me. Let us get our minds and our eyes focused on the Lord. As we follow this story on, and we're running quickly out of time here, you'll find that they never were turned from the work. They never allowed anything to stand in their way. They didn't countenance or have respect into anything that directed them away from the work of God and the job that they had to accomplish. And you'll find, as you follow this on through, that in 52 days, the great work was accomplished. The walls were raised up, the gates were put on the city, and the work was accomplished. Because the people had a mind to work, because their heart and everything was focused on getting this accomplished, and they were not deterred or misdirected by the enemy and all of his tactics, by foes without and foes within, their heart and mind was set to accomplish this great work that was to be accomplished. And so it was accomplished. This is a challenge to all of us today. And it's a lesson that God has put in here for you and I to benefit and profit from. You and I must, our own selves, stay as focused. Not allow the cares of life. Not allow disappointments, lost hopes and dreams to misdirect us. False brethren, anything to get our focus and attention away from the great work that is before us, and most of all, that we may dwell in eternity with our Savior. When I think about the great sacrifice that was made, that this could be so, and that He has given unto us all things which pertain to life and godliness, that leaves me without excuse. He's placed within reach, accessible to all of us, everything that we need to make this run successful. And He has left it with us. He encourages us in it. But you and I have got a job to do here. And that job is to keep our hearts and our minds fixed and focused on God, and not allow the enemy in any of his tactics, be it that one nearest to you or the one farthest removed from you, to detract you, to turn you away, to place something in your heart that would hinder you. Let us not allow any of that to get our hearts and our minds focused off of the things of God. I think about some of the diseases or conditions of vision. Some people are nearsighted. Some people are farsighted. Some people have astigmatism. Some people have cataracts. You can take all of those things and apply them to this. Think about farsighted people. They have a tendency, farsightedness is you can see things out in the distance, but not close up. Some people put this living for God out there. I'll take care of that. When I retire, I'm going to do this for the Lord and I'm going to do that for the Lord. We've heard it. We're going to have to live for God every day because we may not reach out there to retirement, as it were. Nearsighted people can see things up close, but they can't see up far away. Some people's energies are directed only on today, living this life today, and the future's out there. Stigmatism is a condition of the eye that distorts things. There's so much confusion in the world today, false religion. People have such distorted views and ideas about the things of God. And if we're not careful, we can find ourselves out there too. I thought about this. We should be in every service that we can be in, every Bible study we can be in. We should take time to study ourselves. Knowledge is an important thing. And the more knowledgeable we are concerning the things of God, the better it's going to be for us in living for Him. He that is a child in knowledge is going to be tossed to and fro by every wind of doctrine. If we are not knowledge and established in the doctrines of truth, then everything that comes along is going to sound good. And then you hear something else that's contrary to that. Well, that sounds right too. And people get so confused. And a person that is confused is in great danger. We need to get our eyes on Jesus. Get our eyes off of our problems, our troubles, circumstances. Get out from under the circumstances. What are we doing under circumstances? Get our mind and our eyes focused on Christ and the power of God, and He will see us through. He will take us all the way through. Amen.